Section 16 of Animal Heroes. Recording by Nemo. Animal Heroes by Ernest Thompson Seton. The Legend of the White Reindeer. 2. Each springtime, when the reindeer passed over Sveggum's mill run, as they moved from the lowland woods to the bleaker shores of Utrovand, Dofoskal was there to sing about the White Storbuk, which each year became more truly the leader. That first spring he stood little higher than a hare. When he came to drink in the autumn, his back was above the rock where Sveggum's stream enters Utrovand. Next year he barely passed under the stunted birch. And the third year, the Fosskall, on the painted rock, was looking up, not down at him as he passed. This was the autumn when Rol and Sveggum sought the Hoyfeld to round up their half-wild herd and select some of the strongest for the sled. There was but one opinion about the Storbuk. Higher than the others, heavier, white as snow, with a mane that swept the shallow drifts, breasted like a horse, and with horns like a storm-grown oak, he was king of the herd, and might easily be king of the road. There are two kinds of deer breakers, as there are two kinds of horse breakers. One that tames and teaches the animal, and gets a spirited, friendly helper. One that aims to break its spirit, and gets only a sullen slave, ever ready to rebel and wreak its hate. Many a Lapp and many a Norsk has paid with his life for brutality to his reindeer, and Rol's days were shortened by his own pulkren. But Sveggum was of a gentler sort. To him fell the training of the White Storbuk. It was slow, for the buck resented all liberties from man, as he did from his brothers. But kindness, not fear, was the power that tamed him. And when he'd learned to obey and glory in the sled race, it was a noble sight to see the great white, mild-eyed beast striding down the long snow stretch of Utrovand, the steam jetting from his nostrils, the snow swirling up before like the curling waves on a steamer's bow, sled, driver, and deer, all dim and flying white. Then came the Yuletide Fair, with the races on the ice, and Utrovand for once was gay. The sullen hills about re-echoed with merry shouting. The reindeer races were first, with many a mad mischance for laughter. Rol himself was there with his swiftest sled deer, a tall, dark 5-year-old in his primest prime. But over-eager, over-brutal, he harried the sullen, splendid slave till in mid-race, just when in a way to win, it turned at a cruel blow, and Rol took refuge under the upturned sled, until it had vented its rage against the wood. And so he lost the race, and the winner was the young White Storbuk. Then he won the 5-mile race around the lake, and for each triumph, Sveggum hung a little silver bell on his harness, so that now he ran and won to merry music. Then came the horse races. Running races these, the reindeer only trots, and when Balder, the victor horse, received his ribbon and his owner the purse, came Sveggum, with all his winnings in his hand, and said, "Ho, Lars, thine is a fine horse, but mine is a better Storbuk. Let us put our winnings together and race, each his beast for all." A wren against a racehorse. Such a race was never seen till now. Off at the pistol crack they flew. "Ho, Balder! Ho, hi, Balder!" Away shot the beautiful racer, and the Storbuk, striding at a slower trot, was left behind. "Ho, Balder! Hi, Storbuk!" How the people cheered as the horse went bounding and gaining. But he had left the line at his top speed. The Storbuks rose as he flew, faster, faster. The pony ceased to gain. A mile whirled by, the gap began to close. The pony had overspurted at the start, but Storbuk was warming to his work, striding evenly, swiftly, faster yet, as Sveggum cried in encouragement, "Ho, Storbuk! Good Storbuk!" or talked to him only with a gentle rein. At the turning point the pair were neck and neck. Then the pony, though well driven and well shod, slipped on the ice, and thenceforth held back as though in fear. So the Storbuk steamed away. The pony and his driver were far behind when a roar from every human throat in Fjellfjeld told that the Storbuk had passed the wire and won the race. And yet all this was before the White Wren had reached the years of his full strength and speed. Once that day, Rol essayed to drive the Storbuk. They set off at a good pace, the white book ready, responsive to the single rein, and his mild eyes veiled by his drooping lashes. But, without any reason other than the habit of brutality, Rol struck him. In a moment there was a change. The racer's speed was checked. All four legs braced forward till he stood. The drooping lids were raised. The eyes rolled. There was a green light in them now. Three puffs of steam were jetted from each nostril. Rol shouted, then, scenting danger, quickly upset the sled and hid beneath. The Storbuk turned to charge the sled, sniffing and tossing the snow with his foot. But little Knuta, Sveggum's son, ran forward and put his arms around the Storbuk's neck. Then the fierce look left the reindeer's eye, and he suffered the child to lead him quietly back to the starting point. Beware, O driver, the reindeer, too, sees red. This was the coming of the white Storbuk for the folk of Fjellfjell. In the 2 years that followed, he became famous throughout that country as Sveggum Storbuk, and many a strange exploit was told of him. In 20 minutes, he could carry old Sveggum around the 6-mile rim of Utrovand. When the snowslide buried all the village of Holaker, it was the Storbuk that brought the word for help to Opdastrola, and returned again over the 40 miles of deep snow in 7 hours, to carry brandy, food, and promise of speedy aid. When overventuresome, young Knute Sveggumsen broke through the new thin ice of Utrovand, his cry for help brought the Storbuk to the rescue, for he was the gentlest of his kind, and always ready to come at call. He brought the drowning boy in triumph to the shore, and, as they crossed the Vandam stream, there was the troll bird to sing, "Good luck, good luck, with the white Storbuk," after which he disappeared for months, doubtless dived into some subaqueous cave to feast and revel all winter, although Sveggum did not believe it was so. 3. How often is the fate of kingdoms given into child hands, or even committed to the care of bird or beast? A she-wolf nursed the Roman Empire. A wren pecking crumbs on a drumhead aroused the Orange Army, it is said, and ended the Stuart reign in Britain. Little wonder, then, that to a noble reindeer book should be committed the fate of Norway, that the troll on the wheel should have reason in his rhyme. These were troublous times in Scandinavia. Evil men, traitors at heart, were sowing dissension between the brothers Norway and Sweden. "Down with the Union" was becoming the popular cry. O unwise peoples, if only you could have been by Sveggum's wheel to hear the troll when he sang, "The raven and the lion, they held the bear at bay, but he picked the bones of both when they quarreled by the way." Threats of civil war, of a fight for independence, were heard throughout Norway. Meetings were held more or less secretly, and at each of them was someone with well-filled pockets and glib tongue to enlarge on the country's wrongs and promise assistance from an outside irresistible power as soon as they showed that they meant to strike for freedom. No one openly named the power. That was not necessary. It was everywhere felt and understood. Men who were real patriots began to believe in it. Their country was wronged. Here was one to set her right. Men whose honor was beyond question became secret agents of this power. The state was honeycombed and mined. Society was a tangle of plots. The king was helpless, though his only wish was for the people's welfare. Honest and straightforward, what could he do against this far-reaching machination? The very advisers by his side were corrupted through mistaken patriotism. The idea that they were playing into the hands of the foreigner certainly never entered into the minds of these dupes, at least not those of the rank and file. One or two, tried, selected, and bought by the arch enemy, knew the real object in view. And the chief of these was Borgrevinck, a former landsman of Norrlands, a man of unusual gifts, a member of the Storting, a born leader. He might have been prime minister long ago, but for the distrust inspired by several unprincipled dealings. Soured by what he considered want of appreciation, balked in his ambition, he was a ready tool when the foreign agent sounded him. At first his patriotism had to be sopped, but that necessity disappeared as the game went on. Perhaps he alone, of the whole far-reaching conspiracy, was prepared to strike at the Union for the benefit of the foreigner. Plans were being perfected. Army officers being secretly misled and won over by the specious talk of their country's wrongs, and each move made by Borgrevinck more surely the head of it all, when a quarrel between himself and the deliverer occurred over the question of recompense. Wealth untold they were willing to furnish, but regal power? Never. The quarrel became more acute. Borgrevinck continued to attend all meetings, but was ever more careful to center all power in himself, and even prepared to turn round to the king's party if necessary to further his ambition. The betrayal of his followers would purchase his own safety. But proofs he must have, and he set about getting signatures to a declaration of rights, which was simply a veiled confession of treason. Many of the leaders he had deluded into signing this before the meeting at Lardstolsen. Here they met in the early winter, some 20 of the patriots, some of them men of position, all of them men of brains and power. Here, in the close and stifling parlor, they planned, discussed, and questioned. Great hopes were expressed, great deeds were forecast in that stove-hot room. Outside, against the fence in the winter night, was a great white reindeer, harnessed to a sled, but lying down with his head doubled back on his side, as he slept, calm, unthoughtful, ox-like. Which seemed likelier to decide the nation's fate, the earnest thinkers indoors, or the ox-like sleeper without? Which seemed more vital to Israel, the bearded council in King Saul's tent, or the light-hearted shepherd boy hurling stones across the brook at Bethlehem? At Lardstolsen, it was as before, deluded by Borgrevinck's eloquent plausibility. All put their heads in the noose, their lives and country in his hands, seeing in this treacherous monster a very angel of self-sacrificing patriotism. All? No, not all. Old Sveggum was there. He could neither read nor write. That was his excuse for not signing. He could not read a letter in a book, but he could read something of the hearts of men. As the meeting broke up, he whispered to Axel Tonbeck, "Is his own name on that paper?" And Axel, starting at the thought, said, "No." Then said Sveggum, "I don't trust that man. They ought to know of this at Nystuen, for there was to be the really important meeting. But how to let them know was the riddle. Borgrevinck was going there at once with his fast horses. Sveggum's eye twinkled as he nodded toward the Storbuk, standing tied to the fence. Borgrevinck leapt into his sleigh and went off at speed, for he was a man of energy. Sveggum took the bells from the harness, untied the reindeer, stepped into the pulk. He swung the single rein, clucked to the Storbuk, and also turned his head toward Nystuen. The fast horses had a long start, but before they had climbed the eastward hill, Sveggum needs must slack so as not to overtake them. He held back till they came to the turn above the woods at Maristuen. Then he quit the road, and up the river flat he sped the Buk, a farther way, but the only way to bring them there ahead. Squeak, crack, squeak, crack, squeak, crack. At regular intervals from the great spreading snowshoes of the Storbuk and the steady sough of his breath was like the Nordland as she passes up the Hardangi Fjord. High up on the smooth road to the left, they could hear the jingle of the horse bells and the shouting of Borgrevinck's driver, who, under orders, was speeding hard for Nystuen. The highway was a short road and smooth, and the river valley was long and rough. But when, in 4 hours, Borgrevinck got to Nystuen, there in the throng was a face that he had just left at Laudstolson. He appeared not to notice, though nothing ever escaped him. At Nystuen, none of the men would sign. Someone had warned them. This was serious, might be fatal at such a critical point. As he thought it over, his suspicions turned more and more to Sveggum. The old fool that could not write his name at Laudstolson. But how did he get there before himself with his speedy horses? There was a dance at Nystuen that night. The dance was necessary to mask the meeting, and during that, Borgrevinck learned of the swift white wren. The Nystuen trip had failed, thanks to the speed of the white buk. Borgrevinck must get to Bergen before word of this, or all would be lost. There was only one way to be sure of getting there before anyone else. Possibly word had already gone from Laudstolson. But even at that, Borgrevinck could get there and save himself, at the price of all Norway, if need be, provided he went with the white Storbuk. He would not be denied. He was not the man to give up a point, though it took all the influence he could bring to bear this time to get old Sveggum's leave. The Storbuk was quietly sleeping in the corral when Sveggum came to bring him. He rose leisurely, hind legs first, stretched one, then the other, curling his tail tight on his back as he did so, shook the hay from the great antlers as though they were a bunch of twigs, and slowly followed Sveggum at the end of the tight halter. He was so sleepy and slow that Borgrevinck impatiently gave him a kick and got for response a short snort from the buk, and from Sveggum an earnest warning, both of which were somewhat scornfully received. The tinkling bells on the harness had been replaced, but Borgrevinck wanted them removed. He wished to go in silence. Sveggum would not be left behind when his favorite wren went forth, so he was given a seat in the horse sleigh, which was to follow, and the driver thereof received from his master a secret hint to delay. Then, with papers on his person to death doom a multitude of misguided men, with fiendish intentions in his heart, as well as the power to carry them out, and with the fate of Norway in his hands, Borgrevinck was made secure in the sled behind the white Storbuk, and sped at dawn on his errand of desolation. At the word from Sveggum, the white wren set off with a couple of bounds that threw Borgrevinck back in the pulk. This angered him, but he swallowed his wrath on seeing that it left the horse sleigh behind. He shook the line, shouted, and the bulk settled down to a long swinging trot. His broad hoofs clicked double at every stride. His nostrils, out level, puffed steady blasts of steam in the frosty morning as he settled to his pace. The pulk's prow cut two long shears of snow that swirled up over man and sled till all were white, and the great ox-eyes of the king wren blazed joyously in the delight of motion, and of conquest, too, as the sound of the horse-bells faded far behind. Even masterful Borgrevinck could not but mark with pleasure the noble creature that had balked him last night, and now was lending its speeds to his purpose, for it was his intention to arrive hours before the horse sleigh, if possible. Up the rising road they sped as though downhill, and the driver's spirits rose with the exhilarating speed. The snow groaned ceaselessly under the prow of the pulk, and the frosty creaking under the hoofs of the flying wren was like the gritting of mighty teeth. Then came the level stretch from Nystuen's hill to Dolly Carl's, and as they whirled by in the early day, little Carl chanced to peep from a window and got sight of the great white wren in a white pulk with a white driver, just as it is in the stories of the giants, and clapped his hands and cried, "Good! Good!" But his grandfather, when he caught a glimpse of the white wonder that went without even sound of bells, felt a cold chill in his scalp, and went back to light a candle that he kept at the window till the sun was high, for surely this was the storybook of Jotunheim. But the wren whirled on, and the driver shook the reins and thought only of Bergen. He struck the white steed with the loose end of the rope. The bulk gave three great snorts and three great bounds, then faster went, and, as they passed by Dioskul, where the giants sit on the edge, his head was muffled in scud, which means that a storm is coming. The storbuk knew it. He sniffed and eyed the sky with anxious look, and even slacked a little. But Borgrevinck yelled at the speeding beast, though going yet as none but he could go, and struck him once, twice, and thrice, and harder yet. So the pulk was whirled along like a skiff in a steamer's wake. But there was blood in the storbuk's eye now, and Borgrevinck was hard put to balance the sled. The miles flashed by like roods till Sveggum's bridge appeared. The storm wind now was blowing, but there was the troll. Whence came he now, none knew, but there he was, hopping on the keystone and singing of
Norway's fate, Norway's look, of the hiding troll in the riding book.
Down the winding highway they came, curving inward as they swung around the corner. At the voice on the bridge, the deer threw back his ears and slackened his pace. Borgrevinck, not knowing whence it came, struck savagely at the wren. The red light gleamed in those ox-like eyes. He snorted in anger and shook the great horns, but he did not stop to avenge the blow. For him was a vaster vengeance still. He onward sped as before, but from that time Borgrevinck had lost all control. The one voice that the wren would hear had been left behind. They whirled aside, off the road, before the bridge was reached. The pulk turned over, but righted itself, and Borgrevinck would have been thrown out and killed, but for the straps. It was not to be so. It seemed rather as though the every curse of Norway had been gathered into the sled for a purpose. Bruised and battered, he reappeared. The troll from the bridge leaped lightly to the storbuck's head and held on to the horns as he danced and sang, his ancient song, and a new song too.
Ha! At last, O lucky day, Norway's curse to wipe away.
Borgrevinck was terrified and furious. He struck harder at the Storbuk as he bounded over the rougher snow, and vainly tried to control him. He lost his head in fear. He got out his knife at last to strike at the wild buck's hamstrings, but a blow from the hoof sent it flying from his hand. Their speed on the road was slow to that they now made, no longer striding at the trot, but bounding madly. Great five-stride bounds, the wretched Borgrevinck strapped in the sled, alone and helpless through his own contriving, screaming, cursing, and praying. The Storbuk, with bloodshot eyes, madly steaming, careered up the rugged ascent, up to the broken, stormy Hoyfeld, mounting the hills as a petrel mounts the rollers, skimming the flats as a fulmar skims the shore. He followed the trail where his mother had first led his tottering steps. Up from the Von Dam Nook, he followed the old familiar route that he had followed for 5 years, where the white-ringed reaper flies aside, where the black rock mountains, shining white, come near and block the sky, where the reindeer find their mystery. On, like the little snow wreath that the storm wind sends dancing before the storm, on, like a whirlwind, over the shoulder of Sulitind, over the knees of Torholmenba, the giants that sit at the gateway, faster than man or beast could follow, up, up, up and on, and no one saw them go, but a raven that swooped behind, and flew as raven never flew, and the troll, the same old troll that sang by the Von Dam, and now danced and sang between the antlers.
Good luck for Norway, where the white Storbuk comes riding.
Over Tvindhau they faded like flying scud on the moorlands, on to the gloomy distance, away toward Jotunheim, the home of the evil spirits, the land of the lasting snow. There every sign and trail was wiped away by the drifting storm, and the end of them no man knows. The Norse folk awoke as from a horrid nightmare. Their national ruin was averted. There were no deaths, for there were no proofs, and the tale-bearer's strife was ended. The one earthly sign remaining from that drive is the string of silver bells that Sveggum had taken from the Storbuk's neck. The victory bells, each the record of a triumph won, and when the old man came to understand, he sighed and hung to the string a final bell, the largest of them all. Nothing more was ever seen or heard of the creature who so nearly sold his country, or of the white Storbuk who balked him. Yet those who live near Jotunheim say that on stormy nights, when the snow is flying and the wind is raving in the woods, there sometimes passes, at frightful speed, an enormous white reindeer with fiery eyes, drawing a snow-white pulk, in which is a screaming wretch in white, and on the head of the deer, balancing by the horns, is a brown-clad, white-bearded troll, bowing and grinning pleasantly at him, and singing.
Of Norway's look and a white Storbuk,
the same, they say, as the one that with prophetic vision sang by Sveggum's Von Dam on a bygone day when the birches wore their springtime hangers and a great, mild-eyed Varsimle came alone to go away with a little white Renskov walking slowly, demurely, by her side. End of section 16. End of Animal Heroes by Ernest Thompson Seton.